Andy Clark is back on this week's show, this time to discuss whether age dulls your creative passion and how to stay enthusiastic about the web as you get older. This week's show is supported by Free Agent and, well, me, because you just don't hear enough about me on this podcast. Hello and welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul. Joining me is Andy Clark.
Hello.
Hello, Andy. Welcome back to the show.
I think this is number four.
No, you must have been on loads more than that.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think this is number four, including the multiverse one where all the superheroes from all of the different universes came together in
you've been watching too much Supergirl, as you just confessed a moment ago.
You're not supposed to tell everybody about that.
I just have now.
Yes, why do you watch Supergirl?
Actually, I do have a small fondness for Supergirl, because I have this theory that you can never, ever make a good Superman film. Not ever. Including Batman versus Superman, which is supposedly...
Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't, but according to Mark Kermode, whose word about films I trust very much, it's just utterly terrible. So, I really don't like Superman films, but I do have a bit of a soft spot for Supergirl, and I don't know why, because it's just really...
I know why.
Cheesy. No, no, it's not the obvious reason. It's just... I don't know what it is. It's... I don't know exactly. I do not know what it is. But well, Supergirl and The Flash and... Not Legends of Tomorrow, because that is just truly terrible, but there's a couple of good shows, and I quite like them.
Okay.
I went to see Deadpool yesterday. That was... Have you seen it yet?
No, and I know we're going to talk about age and being old and curmudgeonly today, but I was actually put off by the bad language in the trailer.
I say.
Then whatever you do, Andy, don't go and see it. It is the crudest, most disgusting, violent, hilarious thing I think I've ever watched. I just laughed so much.
I do like comic book violence, though, and I like, you know, Sin City or, you know, that kind of stuff. I love comic book violence, but for some reason, and also I don't mind bad language. You know, I sat through, you know, whatever it was, three seasons of Deadwood, and, you know, you just get tuned to it, but I just didn't fancy Deadpool.
I don't know how they do it, but there is something... Because he is so mouthy and so obnoxious, it really offends much deeper, at a much more fundamental level, but in a funny way. I really enjoyed it. I'm ashamed to say. I'm sure I shouldn't, but I did. So we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, you've already identified what we're going to be talking about, the weirdest show ever this week, because we're going to be talking about getting old.
Well, I think,
and thank you
pretty much.
Thank you very much for inviting me onto the old geezer episode.
They've all been like it, though. Every single one. It's like, well, apart, we might have had the odd young person on that I can't. It's escaping me.
Well, I'm thinking about last week when we had Ling
Lim.
That's
true. Yes. And it was a lot more kind of optimistic and less moany than the majority of these shows have been. Hopefully, we do it in quite a sort of amusing way, but we are old geezers moaning, basically. So let's have a whole show on it, I reckon. That's a great idea.
I think, the thing that we were going to get Andy, as we said on last week's show with Ling, was that we were going to get Andy on to talk about staying motivated, and which would have been a much more upbeat subject. But it occurred to me that we did that with Lee earlier in the season, and I'd just forgotten. So I thought, okay, what else does Andy know about? And after struggling to think about what it is actually Andy knows about, I settled on being old.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
So there we go. No, you've got some good stuff. I like, you've been, Andy's been sending through some PDFs of a kind of new workshoppy thing that you're going to start, he's starting. You look very slick and professional. I was most impressed.
Well, we do try our best, and yeah, we'll just probably talk about this throughout the show, but we've been thinking that we needed to, well, not so much go in a new direction, but more formalise some of the stuff that we've been doing for a long time. And for the last few years, we've been teaching clients about style guides in one form or another. I mean, it goes back, you know, 5 or plus years to when we worked with ISO out in Geneva. And one of the things that we did before they became fashionable, you know, and everybody, it was conferences about style guides or whatever. You know, we did this, I don't know, I suppose the kids would call it atomic, but we did this kind of modular process that was all formalized around a sort of a, the design of this style guide. And that was one of the reasons why we got the job with ISO. And we've been doing that kind of thing, you know, regularly. You know, we did it for STEM and we did it for WWF last year and we did it for a whole bunch of others. And we just thought, you know, we might as well actually make a thing out of this. And turn it into, oh, God forbid, not a product, but, you know, turn it into something where actually, you know, we can go out. Because I enjoy teaching, you know, and I enjoy going out there and sharing the knowledge and whatever. And I thought, let's actually just focus on that kind of area and some of the other stuff that we've been teaching for a while.
Yeah.
And we put it on the website recently and we made a nice PDF because, you know, people like, old people like to actually download and print something.
It's nice to hold paper in your hand, isn't it?
Yeah, it'd be nicer if it was a shiny brochure and you sent it through the post by courier pigeon or something.
But I sent it to a few people that I trust, you included.
Oh, I thought it was just me. Oh, now I feel like I thought I was your special advisor, but no, you were sending it out to everybody.
Well, I did actually send it out to 3 people in truth. I sent it out to you and I sent it out to my friend John Jones, who is a UX guy. And I also sent it to my friend Joe Simons, who is probably the best salesman that I've ever worked with.
Okay.
And, you know, Joe's, again, even he's older than us.
Wow, is that possible?
No, exactly.
Still working, unbelievable.
But, you know, Joe, over the years, you know, he's created and bought businesses and then sold them on for millions. And the guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to sales.
Unlike us.
And he's accumulated this knowledge, you know, on actually, you know, what people want to read up front and how you hook their attention and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I sent it to him. And that was why I think the final PDF is so much better, because of everybody's kind of contributions. But again, it just comes back down to, you know, knowledge and experience. And I doubt that, you know, if somebody was just kind of falling out of salesman school or read 101 ways to sell a product, that they'd have given me the same kind of feedback as somebody that's been doing it for 35 years, you know?
I really like you managed to turn that back round to the subject matter for today. I liked that, the way you seamlessly moved back into the subject. It was good. But talking about things that about changing subjects, there's another thing that I need to say before we do our first sponsor and then get into our discussion. And that is, I've changed my mind, Marcus, about what we're doing next season.
Okay. Because you had two ideas anyway. Is this
and I'm
idea?
Not going with either of them. Okay. This is a third one. I've settled now and I've announced it and everything. So it's got to happen now. Which is, next season we're going to look at, it occurs to me, right, if you get stuck on a development project, okay, you go to Stack Overflow and ask your question. If you get stuck with a design thing, there's hundreds of sites that you can get inspiration for and endless articles that provide best practice. But what if you get stuck with like a management-y problem, like a project management problem or a people problem or a culture problem or a bureaucracy problem? Because there are all kinds of ones that we need to overcome and deal with. You know, of like, oh, we've got this client that is doing this dumbass thing, or, oh, my boss is being pushed to go in this direction with digital, and so it goes on. So what I've decided to do is next season we're going to collect those kinds of issues from people, and we're going to have a load of different people that we do short little interviews with each week, to get their answers to those questions, and we're going to see what happens. I think it'd be good.
Cool. So it's a sort of project management kind of season. I don't think we've ever done one of those. So that's
no,
new.
We haven't.
Which is rare.
Yeah, but I didn't want to do just like how to manage a project. It's also, you know, because if you get into things like digital transformation and stuff, it's also about how to change a culture or how to, you know, how do I deal with this difficult person or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Okay. So if you want to contribute a question, because we're going to need a shitload of questions. Sorry, Andy, I swore. we're going to need a lot of questions. So if you can go to boagworld.com/show/season-15. Can you believe it? We're on season 15.
Well, yeah, I'm just, or will be. If Andy's, this is his fourth time on the show. I think we're around about 400 episodes now. So you get one in every 100, Andy.
That sounds about right.
Doesn't make you feel special.
I'm the 1%.
See, now I thought Andy was one of the people. I'm almost hesitant to invite Andy on the show again because I feel like we do it all the time.
Well, it's because
but obviously
often you
we
come
don't.
On, well, you come on to Unfinished Business, which is my podcast, which I shall be starting again very soon. And we
nice
talk
plug.
About Doctor Who, and we talk about kind of other politically incorrect things, and that's probably why it seems more regular, because we guessed on each other's, we cross over into each other's universes is what we do.
And when we go to the pub and things, the fact that we sit there with microphones in front of us and that's the only way we can converse with one another, that might be another aspect to it.
Really? I've been on
no. I just got
because I've been on Unfinished Business once, but it wasn't with you, Andy.
No, I know. Well, we need to rectify that. But yes, it will be back probably in April, if I can be asked.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Your level of commitment is amazing,
Andy.
Should
we go back to the motivation idea?
I think Andy needs to listen to that show. Right, let's just let's do a sponsor and then we'll get into the conversation that we're talking about. Our sponsor is obviously Free Agent, who have supported us through the entire season, and it's particularly poignant. Free Agent is right in the front of my mind because it's now end of year. What's the date?
29th
today. 29th as we record this. So it's like we're just about to end the financial year. And I am so glad I've got Free Agent to do it all in. Oh, it would have been such a nightmare. My accountant absolutely loves me because I just put everything into Free Agent and it makes it so easy for her because it's all just there. She doesn't need to ask me any questions or get anything from me at the end of the year. She just logs into Free Agent. And it's all there. She says from other people, she gets like cardboard boxes full of receipts and, you know, all kinds of crap. But no, it's all just there. So I don't have to worry about it. The end of the financial year has almost been invisible to me, which is great because Free Agent contains all my invoices, all my receipts, all my expenses, all my dividend payments, everything. Everything is all there, ready to go for the end of the year. So there's no, and the other great thing about that is there's no surprises. I don't need to be worried that I've reached the end of year and going, oh shit, what's my corporation tax going to be? Or, you know, what's, you know, my, you know, self-assessment tax or whatever. It's all just there. So you can get a good estimate of what you're owed. And actually, if you're a sole trader, you can get away with not even needing an accountant. You can just use, you can actually submit your self-assessments through Free Agent, which is absolutely brilliant. So it's been really good. It's all sorted and I've discovered, well, you know, because I've earned quite a lot of money, I need to buy some gadgets in order to reduce my my expenditure. So that's what I've had to do.
Your accountant's telling you to buy a Ferrari, is that...
Yeah, basically that's that. Well, Free Agent is telling me that. It speaks to me while I sleep. So, yeah, I bought myself a new MacBook. So there you go, MacBook 12-inch for when I travel. It's very exciting.
Oh, what color did you get?
I got the silver, the dark silver, the whatever, that space grey.
Space grey.
Very cool. It's a lovely little machine. It makes an Air look big and ungainly.
That's not possible.
It's basically invisible. It's like holding, water. I don't know. Water can be quite heavy, actually. That's a really bad analogy. I was going to say it's like holding air, but then that's an air. Mm. So they've done that already. Anyway, free agent. Try it for free for 30 days by going to boagworld.com/freeagent. Also, you can get away if you do a really good job at it, never paying for free agent, which is really good because they've got a really good referral program. Do you use free agent, Andy? This is a dangerous question because you're now going to say no.
Well, I am going to say no because my...
You think it's shit.
No, it's not that at all. I would dearly love to use free agent, but my nearest and dearest, my soulmate, the lady who I've chosen to share my life with, also happens to do our paperwork and all of our accounts because I am rubbish at it.
Right.
And she's not a natural accounting person, so obviously, you know, she does what she does. And she's learnt how to do our accounting stuff using Sage on a PC.
Oh, ouch.
Which means that when we switched her to using a Mac like 6 years ago, we installed Windows on the Mac and the knackered old 15 or 16-year-old version of Sage, which she's really familiar with and she really likes it. And the accountant knows how to get the files and stuff like that. And for the last few years, I've been going, we've got to use Free Agent. We've got to use Free Agent. All the cool kids use Free Agent. And she's like, I won't tell you what software to use to design. So don't tell me what software to do the accounts in. And I'm like, okay.
I know your pain. For years at Headscape, I never had a clue what was going on money-wise because Chris had his, I don't know, witchcraft, I think, basically. He uses some kind of arcane system.
Yes.
And I don't understand it. An abacus. I don't think he even... He uses Excel spreadsheets, doesn't he, basically?
Mostly, yeah.
The whole not having to pay for things because of referrals, though, I decided last year on my podcast that I wasn't going to actually have some sponsors because I didn't want sponsors. And yeah. I decided that I would talk about some things that I liked instead. And one of the things was Cornerstone, which they sell shaving supplies. So, mm-hmm. you know, really nice razors and gels and stuff like that. And the thing with Cornerstone is if somebody signs up with your code, you get £10 credit and they get £10 off their order. A bit of a plug for Cornerstone there.
Yeah. When I mentioned, we need to make sure that we get your referral code for that.
Exactly. I don't want it. I don't want the referral code mentioned ever again because I now have £675 worth of credit. And they won't send me the money. Oh, no. I just have to basically, I just have to shave. I can't shave every day. I mean, I don't.
So all your male friends shaved. Get shaving stuff for their Christmas and birthdays.
Well, the thought did occur to me to send you two some Cornerstone shaving stuff.
That sounds a brilliant idea. I like the sound of that very much. Thank
Presents
you.
Presents always
thank
welcome.
You, please, thank you. Yes. It's my birthday as well. Oh, no, that was last week.
When is your... Is it Thursday?
The actual birthday is this Thursday, yeah.
Happy birthday, but, first Thursday, Paul.
But we celebrated it last week, didn't we? Is because the last week's podcast goes out this Thursday. It's all very confusing.
In keeping with the topic of this conversation, how old were you at your last birthday?
What this birthday that I'm having on Thursday but have already had in podcast world?
Yes, that one.
44. So I'm the youngest on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should sort of, for disclaimers and for the information of the general public, just say that I'm 50. Now, I turned 50 last November.
Did you really?
I did, word.
So you're the oldest here.
Yes, I'm 49. Just turned.
I'm the oldest anywhere.
Yeah. So you were born in 66. I was 67. Paul was born.
No, I was born in yours. November 65. Was my birthday.
Right. Yes. There you go.
So you guys are children of the 60s.
We
then
are.
That's much cooler.
Yeah, there was me being born, Winston Churchill dying, and the two things were unrelated, and Edmund Hillary climbing Everest. All happened in 1965.
There you go. I have no idea what happened in 1972.
I thought Hillary climbed Everest much earlier than that. Are you sure?
Goes
to Google.
He's got to that age. His mind's going.
All mine is.
Anyway, that brings us on to what we're supposed to be talking about. I've got a vague feeling like this whole conversation is actually politically incorrect. Because if you mention age, are you being ageist?
I don't know. No.
It's all right, is it?
Give some monkeys. No, of course.
We can talk about what we like, Paul.
I know we can. So, should we talk about women?
I just need to go back on the previous point and say, on the 29th of May, 1953, Hillary and Nepalese Sherpa mountaineer Tenzing Norgay became the first climbers to reach the summit of Mount Everest.
Well, something else happened in 1965. Then I don't remember what it was, but it was something to do with that. And now you're going to tell me that Winston Churchill didn't die.
I think he did. We did definitely
so
died.
At some point.
There's some kind of implication there that Winston Churchill died, you were born, therefore the spirit of Winston Churchill has been resurrected in you.
Because more like Winston Churchill, you can't get.
I often think that. Well, there are some similarities. You're both good orators.
Both male, English.
Both male, yeah, yeah. He was quite a portly chap, which, of course, you're not anymore.
No, he was a portly chap, and also I have much more luxuriant hair than Winston Churchill.
Yeah, I've got more in common with Winston Churchill in that regards. And Marcus Moore with the portliness.
Oh, but I don't think that it's... I don't think that it's wrong to talk about age. In fact, I think we should talk about age. And this is, you know, we joke about being three kind of curmudgeonly old men. But, you know, everybody's going to get there at some point. And I think what we have to do... And I have to confess that, you know, it's taken me a while to come to terms with it. You have to kind of just be happy with the fact that, you know, you can't do anything about getting old and you might as well just make the most of it. Mm. And, you know, I don't feel 50.
No. And but the other thing, I think the older you get, it kind of changes your attitudes towards things and the world and both in a good and bad way. I think you kind of... One of the things I've noticed is I'm a lot more mellow now than I have been in the past. You know, when I was young, I was, you know, uptight about everything. And I feel a lot more laid back now. But then the flip side of that is, does that mean we're not as kind of... We don't give a shit as much? Do you know what I mean?
No, I think you can give as much of a shit. But I think you... potentially have more of a balanced view on things. And I think that's one of the things that I've kind of think about in terms of age. I mean, you know, I'm not exactly Mr. Sensible a lot of the time, but, you know, when I look back on, for example, when I was, I don't know, 15 to 25, something like that, you know, when I discovered politics back in my younger days, you know, I was a member of the Labour Party Young Socialists, which was basically the kind of front for the, what was in the day called the militant tendency. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Tatchell and all those kind of guys. And, you know, I was extremely radical and, or thought I was anyway. And I went to art school and then I realised that I wasn't extremely radical at all because, you know, there were crazy ass people there that were, you know, members of the, I don't know, whatever, the Socialist Party or, you know, Communist Party or whatever, you know, what art schools are like. And, you know, they were, and I suppose I was to a certain degree, batshit crazy. Because we were young and we thought we could change the world and we thought that we knew everything and everything about what we wanted to achieve, you know, revolution or whatever, was just easy. Yes, let's overthrow capitalism. We can do it by Tuesday afternoon. And... That's how we thought, and that's how, you know, obviously, you know, every generation kind of has that, you know, every young person or, you know, younger generation feels that they know it all already. And, you know, that's just part of the natural cycle. And as you get older, you realize that, no, you know, it's not actually either that easy or that necessary or that advantageous to want to just kind of rip things up and start again. And, you know, we see it now, you know. You see it now with people that talk about, yes, let's destroy the patriarchy. Oh, well, you know, yeah, we can probably do that by 4 o'clock this afternoon. You know, it's exactly the same kind of, I don't know, immaturity that I had and I'm sure everybody else had, you know. And you get past that as you get older and you realise that actually, you know, things do require a little bit more of a balanced view.
But I mean, you get that as well in the web quite a lot. But that's, to some degree, that's what's driven the web, is this kind of willingness to, you know, tear up what we did before and do it differently. So I can't help but wonder whether, because we're older, are we the people that are holding back the web now? Do you know what I mean? Is there an element where our kind of more staid and, well, you know, let's just think this through for a minute. Are we slowing down innovation?
No, you speak for yourself when you talk about holding back as well, because I've got to say that, you know, me, you know, 50-year-old me talking about work on the web now, I just wish that people would do better stuff and more different stuff. And far from holding people back, you know, I want people to go further and do much better and much more creative and much more kind of out there things. And that's not what people are wanting right now. You know, we see this all over. You know, when I look at the web now from, you know, my perspective, having designed for it for a number of years, I am bored to tears by the unimaginative nature of design and the desire for everything to be homogenous and to be the same somehow. And that's not just in terms of, you know, the designs that we see on screen, but it's in how people want to, you know, how nobody wants to hear a contrary opinion about something on the wall, you know, or whatever. You know, everybody seems to think that they know better than everybody else, or their feelings matter better than somebody else, or whatever. Everybody seems to think that things, you know, need to be the same to be good. And, you know, bullshit. You know, when I was a kid, and I know it's sort of nostalgia, but, you know, Sue and I were talking about this the other day. 1977, 78, or whatever, when I was like, you know, 14, 15 years old, we used to go into Corby Town Centre and used to hang out and beat people up. But there used to be, you could see, you know, there's one corner of Corby Market Square where the mods were hanging out, and then there'd be another corner where the punks were, and then there'd be, you know, the Teds, because there were still people that wore kind of crepe sole shoes in 1970-something. And everybody seemed, you know, you could tell there was like these different bits of youth culture, you know, and music was different. And music changed over a period of time. You know, I can still remember, you know, kind of late 70s, early 80s, new wave of British heavy metal. And, you know, going to see Motorhead for the first time. And, you know, that kind of thing just seems to have gone now. You know,
yeah,
and the
young
world
people today are not as, you know,
seems just, to be. But so far from holding people back, you know, I just wish that somebody would make something really daring. But they don't. They don't do something daring because everybody's afraid of upsetting somebody else. Jesus.
I've got to say as well, on that same line, I feel it about, like, writing and you know, what people are saying and writing online as well. Just everybody spending, you know, but you've got to do your keyword research and you've got to identify a compelling headline and you've got to front load it and you've got to make it scannable and you've got to do this and you've got to do that and you've got to do the other. At some point, surely you just want to write and get, you know, great content and say something with a passion. And does it really matter if it's got grammatical errors or if it's, you know, the headline isn't as engaging as it could be? You know, blogging has had the soul sucked out of it as well. Now we really are sounding like grumpy old men.
excuse me. I don't know. The music one kind of, that sort of rings true with me, because I started listening to music in the late 70s and was listening to stuff from the early 70s as well at the same time and all the way through the 80s. And, yeah, as a musician, so I really, really listened to lots of music. And I went through most of the 90s when I stopped listening to music because we were having kids, and then got back into it again thinking, oh, this is all rubbish. But over the last 5 or so years, I've started getting back into music again, and I actually think I'm wrong, and it's just nostalgia, really. There was fantastic music around in the 70s and the 80s, but I think there still is. I think it's harder for musicians these days, but that's another conversation entirely. I think people are just as creative musically, whether they are on the web. I don't know. I know what you mean if we're talking about design. I think we've all written about a desire to have a more creative outlook towards design, but I wonder whether that's just because a a lot of people just want a site for a certain amount of money, and they'll take the simplest route. And that's, and it's a, maybe we're trying to compare web design to music isn't a fair comparison, because it's often support, a website is often supporting a business, whereas music is kind of truly artistic. I don't know, really.
Are we becoming, you said a really important word there, which is nostalgia. And I think there is a degree where the older you get, you do get a rose-tinted view of what things used to be like. You know, so if we keep the web example, you know, I remember us having incredibly creative sessions of, you know, and producing totally outlandish websites, and trying new things and innovating, and everything was new all the time. You never did things the same way twice. But is that just the way that I'm choosing to remember it? I'm not saying that that isn't true, but I think I'm also forgetting the amount of shit that went on with it as well, and the problems, and the, were those websites actually that good? Were they that effective, etc.? So I think you can, nostalgia is a big element in this, surely.
I think it is an element, but I don't think nostalgia is necessarily a bad thing if you're remembering the good stuff and you can apply it to what you're doing today. I mean, you know, great typography is not nostalgic, and yet no. We see very, very little good typography on the web. And I'm not talking about web fonts. I'm talking about somebody really knowing how to use a typeface creatively. So great layout, distinctive layout, layout that's perhaps inspired by, let's say, magazines or other kind of pop culture elements or whatever. That's not nostalgic. That's a good thing that we can make distinctive, imaginative websites from. And, you know, the older you get, I suppose, the more inputs you have. You know, the fact that Marcus and I can remember flared trousers is probably a good thing for us in terms of, you know, our approach to what we're designing on the web now. Whereas, you know, if we were 25, we'd have a lot less in way, by way of inputs. Which is potentially why so much of the web is looking visually similar right now, is because I suppose the majority of it is being designed by people that haven't had our remarkable breadth of experience, Marcus.
Well, absolutely. Yes.
But you could say that, but you know, me and you have slightly different views over this particular thing, because I wrote a post recently about design convergence not necessarily being a bad thing. And I do wonder whether we have this longing for those creative days, when actually now best practice has emerged. You know, there is now best practice out there, and we need to just kind of accept that things have changed. Maybe. I don't know. I'm making it up.
I'll extend that point maybe a little bit. I think that there is best practice from a UX point of view, certainly. I think what we're talking about here is more of the aesthetic aspects of design, and that people just aren't as, or it seems when I go around the internet looking at different websites, it seems that people tend to take the kind of simplest route when they don't have to. I'm not saying that it's necessarily bad that you follow another design, you know, follow a simple route regarding a kind of the aesthetic qualities of a design, but you don't have to. And I'll go back to my previous point. I think half the reason why there aren't that many kind of interesting looking websites out there is from a budgetary point of view.
Do you think there's also, sorry, go on.
No, good, go on.
Go on, Andy. Well, I was going to say, you say that, and I do think budget is a big issue, but do you think that age is an aspect in that as well? Do you think actually, yeah, just the older you get, the more you've seen, the more designs you've looked at, the more life you've lived through, the more, you know, that you can remember 1970s and, you know, some of the amazing record covers that were around back then. You don't even have bloody record covers now, you know. And do you think that breadth and depth kind of opens you up to more possibilities?
I think that it does give you Like, the more inputs you have, the more potential combinations of those things you can make. And that has to be a good thing when it comes to design. I mean, that's why people should, you know, get out from behind their computer and go to an art gallery at the weekend, or, you know, go into a magazine store and spend 50 quid on magazines and or go to Smith's and tear out the contents pages or do whatever they want to do. Don't say that. To get as many kind of creative inputs as possible.
Because you are right then. You could be old and not have seen anything, and you could be young and have seen a lot. So it's just the probability goes up the older you get, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that one of the other things about being older is that you become a better editor of these things. So you might have seen something really good that last week that was, you know, new and funky. But you can take parts of that and you can combine it with something which is very traditional. So, for example, just to use like the simplest example I can, you can produce a beautiful layout which is based on, for example, a Swiss grid. Mm-hmm. And you can combine that with some beautiful forms of animated interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that I think is important about getting older, is, you know, you're continually absorbing all of these things, and you know, and it's down to good taste, you know when to pick one thing and combine it with another.
And that's partly because you've messed it up a lot. You know, the older you are, the more mistakes that you've made, and the more opportunities there is to learn from those mistakes. But I mean, the kind of, all the time, I think we should have had someone young on the show as well, shouldn't we, to bring some balance? Because the trade-off of that is when you've made so many mistakes, when you've seen so much, you've seen what works and what doesn't, that sometimes I think you've got this tendency of going, oh, well, I won't try that because I know it won't work. My experience tells me that it won't. But the truth is that the world moves on and it changes, and what didn't work in the past may well work now. So sometimes you don't want to be held back by that kind of thinking.
And you also don't want to rule out new ideas. You know, I don't want to work with a young designer and for them to be thinking, well, you know, I've got to copy something that's old or whatever. You know, you want to still be open to new ideas and open to new inputs. Mm. And, you know, the danger of becoming kind of older and set in your ways is, well, you know, you settle on a house style, or you think, well, I'm only going to look in these places for my creative inspiration, in the same way that you might think to yourself, well, I'm only going to listen to 1970s heavy metal music. Which, of course, would be, you know, silly, and you'd be missing out on a whole world of other kind of creative opportunities. So it's about combining everything together.
Do you think that you've had some of your enthusiasm knocked out of you as you've aged? Because, I mean, yeah, you've gone through some rough patches, as everybody does in their lives at various occasions. And do you think that, you know, that knocks some of that energy and enthusiasm out of you? And is that okay?
I personally still have enthusiasm, and lots of it, for good design. Yeah. And I appreciate good design, and I want to be creative in lots of areas. I mean, you know, it's what I've always done, for apart from a few kind of periods in my life where, you know, I did sales or something silly. But, you know, I've always wanted to be creative, and I always want to carry on being creative. And I still have a lot of enthusiasm for that. I honestly have lost an enormous amount of enthusiasm for the web.
And right.
Part of that is because of the industry and people in it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And partly because just of the way that things have been going over what I would say, you know, the last sort of 5 or 6 years, where we have seen this rise of homogenous design and data-driven, user experience-driven, dare I say, product design. And therefore, the thing that I tend to design for is not what people talk about anymore. And Yes, so I have lost an enormous amount of enthusiasm for the web. And that's why I have less to talk about. You know, I have less to talk about at conferences. I have less to write on my blog because, you know, I still have a blog, even though I never bloody write on it much anymore. And it's why the podcast that I do doesn't really talk about web stuff anymore because my interests are somewhere else.
Hmm. So you almost, your interests are in design and creativity rather than the web was always just a platform for delivering that, and it's less of a platform for that now.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
And now, from a business point of view, you know, my business, my livelihood relies on designing for the web and teaching people how to design for the web.
So is that not a problem then? Because essentially it sounds like you've lost enthusiasm for your job.
To a certain extent. But I think what it's helped to do, these dry periods, I think they help you focus on what it is that you are absolutely 100% interested in. And, you know, the web is such a sort of vast area of expertise, you know, from, content strategy through to, you know, making something look pretty. And, you know, I am very much interested in the creative ideas part of the the process, and not at all interested in some of the other areas. And you know, I think that's fine because, you know, as you get older, you want to kind of, you know, you're honing your skills all the time, and I can't be an expert in everything. No. So, and I can't, my brain doesn't work as quickly as it used to, so I can't learn as much about all these different things as I used to be able to do. So you find yourself, I don't know, specializing a bit more, I suppose.
Yeah, focusing. That's quite interesting, isn't it? Because also your career path can take you... I mean, I look at you and I kind of go, well, in some ways, your career path has taken you into an element of the web which maybe is not most suited to you. Because you engaged early in the web standards movement and you know, that kind of thing. And that made sense for you in the move to CSS and all the rest of it, because it opened up loads of creativity that wasn't previously possible. So, you know, you went down that route. But a natural progression from the web standards movement and that kind of thinking is in terms of usability and the standards of development and those kinds of things, because there is a whole nother kind of side of the web that we don't get exposed to, or we don't talk about as much, which is the kind of the advertising and marketing and side of the web, where they're doing much more creative brand building pieces rather than functional websites, if that makes sense. Do you think in hindsight you would have preferred to have gone down that route?
I think we've always sort of trodden a very fine line between the two. And yes, I was interested in accessibility and usability when it was still called usability before it became whatever it is now. And I was interested in standards and I was interested in CSS because I wanted to control how something was going to reach the screen. So that's why I learned how to make HTML and CSS, because there was no good having a bright idea in Photoshop. I wanted to actually see it finished. I've completely lost my train of thought. You see, that's what happens.
That's because you're getting old.
That's because I'm getting old. But no, But it's been more recently that we've really tried to focus more on ideas again. And, you know, I will say to people quite often, you know, I'm not interested in product design for the most part. I mean, we do it sometimes, but it's not what kind of, you know, butters my buns. What matters to me, I don't make screwdrivers. You know, a digital product, a product is a screwdriver, yeah? You know, a chainsaw is a product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a digital chainsaw, if there's such a thing could exist, that would be a product. I don't make those things. What I make, I think about, and I want to think about, is designing the website that convinces somebody to buy my digital chainsaw rather than somebody else's. And it's that area. You might call it advertising, you might call it marketing, you might call it any number of things. But it's about communicating ideas. And that's not about UX. It's not about visual design to a certain extent, but, you know, and that's not what people talk about. And that's what, that's why I think that I've drifted away from the web in terms of wanting to talk about it or on it for a while, because my interests are not in the same place that are aligned to what most people are thinking about.
Yeah, I don't know whether I agree with you over that, or one part of it. I agree with most of it, but I see what you just described as part of UX, right? Just as much as usability is a part of UX, so is what I'm going to call persuasive design, which is what you've been talking about, that engages and enthuses and excites and nudges people into action. In my view, both of those are equal partners in UX. The user experience, the very word experience, it conjures up a lot more than just making something functional. You know, using a screwdriver isn't an experience, right? But it's an experience if you're putting up, you know, you're creating something amazing with that screwdriver. And what you're interested in is getting people to think about the potential of that screwdriver to change their lives. That, you know, if they own that screwdriver, they could create a great new piece of furniture for their house, right? Mm. But equally, the other side of the equation is, well, if the screwdriver doesn't actually frigging work, it's no good. So in my view, the two kind of sit side by side with one another.
Yeah, well, there's that. I can't remember the exact analogy now, but people say you don't buy a drill, you buy a hole in the wall, or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
and you know what you're selling. You know, we just finished a nice little job for a nice little firm of solicitors who specialise in divorce. That was funny. I was getting it was quite funny actually, because I was dealing with the client before we actually got hired for the job, and I was sitting there with Sue one night showing her some designs that I've been working on, and you know how the Mac has like notification center, it pops up in the top right hand corner. All of a sudden this thing from Gavin at 123 Divorce popped up in the top of the screen. She's like, is there something you should tell me?
I thought you were going to say you showed her the design that you were doing for the website, and it was so compelling she filed for divorce.
But
you were just too convincing.
But you can't say we're not just selling divorce services. You know, we're just selling a legal pack. You're not just selling, you know, time spent with somebody. What are you selling? You know, you're selling, you know, a potential different future, or you're selling a certain amount of peace of mind, or whatever it is,
and freedom, or
freedom, or however you want to describe it. And that's a very different thing. Thinking about that kind of stuff is very different from thinking about actually how the tool works. And where most people still are, and I've been banging on about this for like 2 years now, is most people are still about how does the tool work, and they're actually not thinking about you know, the bigger picture, the why and the emotional side of things and everything else.
And that, coming back to our topic, I think that comes with age. I think you the older you become, okay, you lose some enthusiasm, you lose some passion, you lose some excitement. But I think that the older you become, you do start to think through a lot more, that you understand a lot more about why you're making decisions, how you're making decisions, what are influencing you. And you see the world in a much more broader, holistic sense that maybe is lost a little bit when you're younger. That's what I think, anyway. Your silence tells me you don't agree.
No, I'm thinking of a considered response.
Well, let me ask you a different question instead. Do you think, because we need to wrap up soon, do you think that our industry is ageist? I want you to say, rather than me.
No, I don't think it is. And I think the reason why I don't think it is because, despite what some people may tell you, it is a very egalitarian, you can make it if you want to, industry. Mm-hmm. Now, I have reinvented my career path several times since I started work in 1988. So I've done lots of things. You know, I started off by working in photography. I got into sales and I became very good at it. And I went back into doing digital stuff and became more interested in that. I was very good at that. And I've reinvented my career path and I've taken, you know, turns along the way. And even now at 50, if I decide that I want to potentially take a slightly different direction, you know, staying on the web, working more in terms of consulting or training or teaching or all this kind of stuff alongside the kind of, you know, the design work that I'm still enthusiastic about, I can do that. And actually anybody can do that. Now, if, for example, I remember a guy that I used to know years ago that I think it was it COBOL? Whatever the programming language was, big database things. Yeah. And he was like a COBOL programmer, and he'd been out of work for 2 years because he couldn't get any COBOL programming jobs. And I kept saying to him, you're never going to get a COBOL programming job. Nobody uses COBOL anymore. It's like diminishing return. Go learn Java or whatever it was at the time. You know, go learn Ruby. So it's not as if you kind of, you know, if you don't put the effort in, and you aren't adaptable, then it's not going to happen for you. But I think that if you are adaptable and you are interested and you want to keep learning or changing or whatever, then you can do it. It doesn't matter how old you are, you know. And I think that our industry is actually really good from that point of view. You know, and we've all seen friends of ours that have gone off in slightly different directions when they've hit a fork in their career, or they've, you know, they've set up another agency, or they've set up a publishing company, or they've, you know, they've launched a side project that, you know, takes up more of their time or whatever. And I think the industry is great for that. So I don't think it's ageist on that side at all.
No. I asked the question expecting to get a different response from you, but I actually do agree with what you're saying, that actually I think the key isn't anything to do with age. It's about adaptability. You know, it's about being willing to change and adapt to the constantly altering circumstances. And I tell you something, where this has become really apparent to me at the moment is this whole, you know, this whole thing about, oh, is the agencies going away? Is everything moving in house? Are we being replaced by Squarespace at the bottom end of the market and all the rest of it? And my response to that is, well, yeah, maybe, but so what? Let's just adapt to the situation. And I think that that is one thing that is quite nice about being older. And probably I'm going to answer the last question, which I was going to have, which is what advice would we give to the younger generation? And it would be that you will see through your career endless changes, directions. You know, the whole industry will flip in a different direction, and you need to be adaptable to that, you know, that sudden change, whether it be the rise and fall of Flash, or the, oh, you know, suddenly it's all about Cold Fusion and the next week it's not, you know, all of these kinds of things. It is about being able to adapt and move quickly, and I think having seen that a lot of times does make it easier and make you more confident about it.
Yeah. I think it's also about being age appropriate. So I wouldn't be able to, you know, rock up at a nice young agency or startup or whatever and do a job as a, you know, regular designer or front end developer or whatever, because I'm not going to fit in. You know, I'm not going to fit in. And that's fine. You know, sometimes I'll see somebody tweet, Cameron Moll will tweet some kind of authentic job link or whatever it might be. And just out of pure curiosity, I'll actually go take a look. And sometimes you follow the link to the agency and you see a bunch of, you know, let's just face it, you know, under 30s. And you think, you know what? I am not going to fit in there as one of those people. But what I could be is I could be a mentor, or I could be their creative director, or I could be their I can't think of another job title because it's all rubbish anyway. But that's a sort of
an advisor, a support.
Exactly. Kind of senior level thing. And I think that that's absolutely okay. And in the same way that, you know, I think that it's perfectly okay for us to think about, you know, well, we're not going to fit in to that environment. You know, I'm not going to go to Dropbox, for example, where, you know, all the cool kids work, and sit there next to Tim Van Damme or whatever and just be one of the lads, because it's not going to happen. I kind of accept that. And at the same time, it's okay for them to say, do you know what? We wouldn't want to accept you either. Mm. You know, it's okay. We don't have to make inclusive environments because, you know, everybody is going to be different. And some environments are going to be good for some people and some environments are not going to be great for some people. And I would probably really, really enjoy working with you two because we would have lots of similar interests. Mm. But, and we'd, you know, we'd probably take a similar approach to things. I would be completely the wrong person to be working at Dropbox or any number of these other startups. And you know what? It's okay. So I'm not going to grumble about things being ageist or, you know, discriminatory or non-inclusive or any other such bollocks, because some places are okay for some people and some places are okay for others. And that's just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly believe that there are different stages in your career path, and that, you know, you need to let go of some parts of it and accept, look, I'm not going to fit in where I did in the past. I'm not going to be able to exist in that environment anymore, but I've got new things to be able to offer. There are new environments where I can fit in and where I can contribute value. I mean, talking about the advice, one of the things that I do, as you know, is mentorship. And I'm working with a guy at the moment who has set up an agency in Switzerland, is doing really, really well, is working with Rolex and all these big kind of luxury brands in Switzerland, is doing amazingly. And I'm advising him, and I'm thinking, what am I adding of value to this? This guy is doing incredible. But here's the thing. That guy is 19 years old. At 19, he's still in flipping school, and he has managed to build an agency of half a dozen people that are working with these world-class brands, right? And he sees value in me simply because of the years of experience and the kind of advice that I can give him from the outside. But equally, I look at him and I'm in awe of him for his enthusiasm, his drive, his energy, and he's always working. So it's that kind of recognizing that you have different things to bring to the table at different points in your career that I think is absolutely essential.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's wrap up at that point. I think we could go on forever, but that seems like
I want to make one more point, Paul.
You always do that, Marcus. Always. It's becoming as traditional as the joke now.
It's just going back to is our industry ageist? I don't think it is. I agree with that. But I just wanted to make the point that I think that there aren't any... There are only a handful of people older than us in this... In our industry. So I don't think we know yet whether it's ageist. Let's see how we're treated in 15 years' time if we're still wanting to work. So, yeah, then we'll know. We don't know yet, I guess, was the only point that I wanted to leave you with.
Yeah, and that is a fair point. All right, so that brings us on to our second sponsor, which is me, which is weird. But I had these two empty sponsor slots, and I thought I'd say a little bit about what I do, and because nobody ever understands, everybody always says, "So, what is it that you actually do, Paul?" So I thought I'd explain it. So last time I talked about how I did quite a lot of strategy, digital strategy stuff, and I did a lot about cultural change and that kind of thing. This time I want to talk about really the areas that we've already touched on. So I will be very quick, which is training and mentorship. So with the training, it kind of falls into four areas. I seem to spend quite a lot of my time. The only word I could come up with, and I hate the word, is I spend a lot of my time doing motivational presentations. So essentially, I get wheeled out in front of people that are not digital kind of natives or don't really get digital, often senior management teams, and I infuse them and put some energy into them in terms of investing into digital. So probably a business case presentation sounds better, but a lot of it is an emotional kind of oomph behind them. So that's one thing I do. I do a lot of workshops. pretty much like Andy, actually. But while Andy does kind of more creative and practical stuff, my workshops tend to be around more organizational issues. Although that said, next week I'm doing one on persuasive design and one on creating a superior customer experience. So they're a bit more creative, but still not kind of, I'm not kind of cool like Andy. I say that in the loosest sense. I also do, in parts training, I do a lot of training material, videos and blogs and that kind of stuff, and helping with comm strategies. Organizations that have got a digital team in, that digital team needs to communicate digital best practice to the rest of the organization. How do they do it? That kind of thing. So that's the training side. Then there's the mentorship, and that falls into two areas. I do mentorship for companies, a lot of not-for-profits, charities, people like that, who've got digital teams, and those digital teams are often isolated, are frustrated by their organization, and they need outside help. They need somebody to help bounce ideas around with, to give them direction, to keep them moving forward and bringing about change in their organization. So I do a lot there. And then I do the business coaching for other digital agencies. So like the guy I mentioned in Switzerland, but there are others as well. I actually've got two mentorship slots available at the moment. So if anyone's interested, give me a shout. But that is pretty much it. Joke, Marcus.
I've got to use...
No, I'm not saying you're a joke, Marcus, sorry.
Wouldn't be the first time you've called someone a joke on the show, is it? Would it? Is it? Would
no.
It?
No.
I've got to use Drew McClellan's from the Bag World Slack channel, because it made me giggle. Some people say that the Roman Empire invented Vaseline. They're wrong. It's ancient Greece.
That's very good.
That is a good one.
It's almost politically correct as well, isn't it? Slightly.
Let's not go there.
Yeah.
We talked about this the other day before on our pre-podcast talk about your politically correct jokes or incorrect jokes.
We did.
Something, yes.
Being living in Wales, I can tell Welsh jokes and nobody can complain at me. Nobody can point a finger and say you're being out of order because I live in Wales. I class myself as a Welshman now. So, you know, when I ask a question, like, you know, what's the best thing that comes out of Wales?
I don't know. What's the best thing that comes out of Wales? Grits tea.
The M4.
I didn't lie.
I can say that. I can say that and be completely above board. Did you hear about the Welshman? He was on his driving test and the examiner said, can you make a U-turn? And he said, I don't know about that, but can I make it eyes water?
That one I really like.
I'm allowed to say that.
But I'm not allowed to laugh
at
it. You see, there's the problem. You've now made me politically incorrect.
I'm gritting my teeth through these. There aren't any more, are there, Andy? No.
We're going to stop at this point. No, it's time to stop. As for next week, I have no frigging clue.
Ooh.
I had all these plans for next week, but I don't think I'm going to be able to pull them off. So I don't know, right? I wouldn't bother tuning in if I were you. It'll probably be rubbish, but I will try. I'll see who I can scrape out the bottom of the barrel. It'll probably be Lee again. Lee. He always likes it when I do that. Now I'm going to make it happen. It's going to be a good show. But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye. Bye.